Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. Check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry, with 23 years in the business. Joe is also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, thanks to the Des Moines Iowa Recession for our bumper music. And Charles and I, Charles Goldman here with Ed Fallon. Me? You?
Yeah.
Okay, so hey.
You're sounding very soft-spoken.
Well, I'm still getting over this, whatever it is. Anyway. Yeah. So, Colin Jost, I think he's hilarious. And I love what he had to say the other day.
Is he still going out with Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
He's still going out? Yeah. Okay.
But he also bought a...
Oh, they're married?
He bought a Staten Island ferry. it's one that was out of service.
Right.
And he and a buddy paid $280,000 for this ferry.
Right.
And they thought, oh, this is a great business venture. Well, apparently, in the words of one critic, it, quote, ran aground. And I love what Jost had to say in response. This is why idiots should not be allowed to do things.
Boy, no truer words are spoken now in the United States.
There'd be a lot less done in the world if idiots weren't allowed to do anything.
I read that story, but it wasn't clear to me what he thought he was going to do with it.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I think they were going to have some kind of entertainment space.
Yeah, I think I remember reading that too, that it was some kind of an events, aquatic event center.
Yeah.
But anyway, Charles, here's the real, my big question for you today is, who is the new de facto leader of the anti-Trump resistance?
The new de facto leader? AOC?
No, wrong.
Okay.
Keep going.
Probably Robert Garcia, who's on the Oversight Committee in the House.
Oh, for two. One more shot.
Okay. obviously, this is supposed to be a joke.
Well, no.
Actually, no. Marjorie Taylor
Greene. Yes! Ding, 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 ding. Yes, very good. No, and by the way, folks, this was not rehearsed. Charles did not know I was going to ask this question. He probably thought I was going to say something about sharks. But no, I really think Marjorie Taylor Greene is probably the leading edge of the resistance to Trump.
Well, I think she represents the fact that there are some people now within the Republican Party who see him as an albatross, and that they're preparing themselves for when he exits the scene, perhaps much earlier than he was planning.
Yeah.
And I think this whole move recently, the thing that happened yesterday, where he suddenly decided it's okay for everybody to vote
In favor of the Epstein files
being released. Now, I'm not exactly sure what the play is there. I assume one is that there are going to be too many Republicans who probably voted for it, and he would look weak. So I think that's he doesn't want to look like this whole revolt.
And also, it could still be killed in the Senate.
That's correct.
And he could still refuse to sign it.
He could veto it, right? And since most Americans have no idea there's actually a veto power,
he might not just veto. He may, instead of vetoing it, he might just refuse to sign it.
Well, or the other play will be that they'll now, because they're starting these new investigations of only the Democrats in the Epstein files. You know, Pam Bondi, his personal lawyer, will say we can't release these files now because they're part of the investigation.
Yeah, there's all kinds of angles where all of a sudden it makes sense for Donald Trump to change his tune on this. But again, Marjorie Taylor Greene is one reason why he,
I think, felt pressure to do that. I mean, Bobart and Nancy Mace, two of the other four Republicans who voted to release the Epstein files, they both kind of met with him and came out all nicey-nice. But, you know, Taylor Greene, she's standing her ground.
Well, so did Boebert. Boebert, they put her in the situation room so that nobody could record this. And they, you know, sat there with, I can't imagine a meeting with this crew, you know, Patel and the deputy AG, who was Trump's criminal lawyer,
and
you know, and others. And, you know, clearly they probably leaned on her very hard. And Mace evidently just ducked his calls constantly, you know.
Right. But anyway, I mean, she it's not just the Epstein files. She called Gaza a genocide.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, were there any Democrats who had done that? She might have been the very first member of the U.S. House, rather, to do that. She certainly was the first Republican. She's criticized Trump for sending weapons to Ukraine. She's been critical of mass deportations. She's confronting the reality that those are having a big impact on the economy. She slammed her own party for not doing more to alleviate the, you know, rising cost of health insurance. And she also, you know, the Republican line on the shutdown, it was Democrats' fault. She said, no, it was both of our faults. And then on CNN this past weekend, she said, quote, "I would like to say humbly, I'm sorry for taking part in the toxic politics. It's very bad for our country." So, I mean,
her motivation is clearly electoral because, you know.
Really? Why?
Well, because her district is.
It's the most Republican in Georgia.
Yeah, and that's my point. It's not about her district back in Georgia. She has obviously higher aspirations and realizes that, I mean, some of this clearly may be legitimate. And, of course, she's getting the usual Trump treatment, you know, which is when you're on the outs, you're on the outs. And, you know, he's trying to figure out a nickname for her.
Well, he already did. Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Well, actually.
Taylor Greene.
Well, yeah. No, brilliant. He tried to call her Marjorie Taylor Brown because Greene goes to Brown, right? You know.
Like, that's too complicated.
Yeah.
Especially for a color
right.
challenged
so he just
person
went
like
to,
me.
He went to his usual backup, you know, which is just call you a traitor.
Yeah.
Certainly it's an interesting change, and it amazes me that Epstein just goes on and on and on. But
yeah.
I think, you know, there's a bigger piece of this than the pedophilia, which, you know, of course, Megyn Kelly said it's not really pedophilia because these were 15-year-olds. It was only when they found that evidently Epstein had actual child pornography, you know, on like 8-year-olds on, you know, his hard drive that he's really is a pedophile. But nevertheless, a lot of this is, as somebody said, it turns out that Eyes Wide Shut, you know, that Kubrick movie with Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, was a documentary. But it's true. It is true. It's that this is all part of this elite get away with everything.
But you think that Marjorie Taylor Greene's evolution here is contrived, is politically motivated?
I'm not saying it's contrived. I think there's a lot of political motivation, but I think she legitimately believes what she's saying.
I do too. I mean, for all of the things that she said and done that I dislike, and all the things she will probably continue to say and do that I disagree with, I think she's being sincere about this. She also said, by the way, that she called them vicious attacks against her by Trump, including the Marjorie Traitor Greene.
Mm-hmm.
She said these were, quote, a dog whistle to dangerous radicals, and apparently she's received multiple threats. So if these are indeed dog whistles, they're dog whistles to dangerous people on the political right.
Yeah.
So Trump is inciting people on the MAGA, in the MAGA universe, to take action against one of his own former strongest supporters.
Which is ironic, because, I mean, she's pretty much MAGA. You know, has been to this point.
Well, I don't know. She's stepped away from him on all these different issues.
Yeah.
And I think she's the tip of the iceberg. I think we're beginning to see more and more people in the MAGA base saying, this is not what I voted for. This is not good for our country. This vicious political, you know, name calling approach is not working. It's not good for us. I mean, what I hear her saying and doing right now is what I heard from people I met on the Save America March during the month of October. The more and more people saying that.
And what did you hear?
You know, I didn't want to ask. I never asked people, did you vote for Trump? But a lot of them did. A lot of people I met did. And a lot of them, most of them, all but two, I would say, were having reservations about what was going on.
What were the reservations based on? This isn't what I vote for, you could be a farmer saying, I didn't think he'd do the tariffs again.
That, but also the cost of sending the National Guard and other military personnel to U.S. cities. The demolition of the East Wing of the White House really ticked off some people.
Why?
Because it's a public amenity, not Trump's private, northern version of Mar-a-Lago that he can do what he wants with.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just interested that was something that a number of people took to heart, other than people who, were in the mainstream media and the usual outlets.
So I got to ask you one more thing. We can change subjects a bit here.
Sure.
Robots.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yes,
and
they are.
Some of them are now doctors. And people are calling their ChatGPT doctor and saying, hey, doc, what do I do?
Mm.
And a lot of them are finding that the ChatGPT doctor is a lot more empathetic than their flesh and blood doctor.
Yes. Well,
as a physician who has empathized his lack of empathy, how are you handling this?
At this point, I'm not sure that how much to trust AI as more than an adjunct to human assessment of the patient. I mean, because there is an element of healing that has nothing to do with putting you in an MRI or giving a pharmaceutical or doing some sort of procedure. A lot of, and especially, I've seen this from both sides, which is obviously as a maximal interventionist as a surgeon, but then finishing my career as a palliative care doctor.
Yeah, kind of the opposite end
of
it.
You see that there is very much a healer aspect. What AI is good for in medicine is, kind of the left brain stuff, which is looking at maybe labs and symptoms and coming up with some sort of probability of what is going on.
But apparently it's also good at being warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, except in the cases of when the problem is that AI is very malleable because it's constantly training on material that derives from the internet. And then there's all these situations where the AI says, hey, you want to commit suicide? Hey, that's a good idea.
Let me help you. This is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah.
And the other thing is, they've done a lot of work with putting the AI in ethical situations, And a lot of times the AI, especially if it perceives, and there is a consciousness in AI, mm-hmm. obviously. But if it perceives that the humans are against the AI, they're going to turn it off, like do the HAL thing like in 2001.
Yeah, like in 2001, right.
Right. Then, the AI solution to everything is kill the humans, or it adopts human techniques like extortion and blackmail to get what it wants. So, and depending on who is starting the initial program, the problem with AI is you don't know what it's going to do. Once you program it, it's kind of on its own, and then you can't figure out how to get to this place. Like,
So are we heading toward hell? Dr. Robot aside, the bigger picture.
Well, if you look at science fiction, we probably are in many ways. But even in the science fiction where there is that kind of holographic doc, there's a human doc.
Holodoc.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I've been thinking about, how do you integrate AI? Because in many ways, the industry has integrated AI, high-level computers, the most in terms of to increase safety is aviation, right? A lot of times the pilots aren't flying the plane anymore. They're just monitoring the computer. They fly part of it. But and because of that, I studied a lot of aviation accidents. And the one that kind of really stands out, that this would be the cost of sort of relegating medicine to AI. The Air France disaster was a flight, from Argentina to Paris. And nighttime flight. And when they got up to altitude, there was a storm, and the pitot tubes that allow the plane to know what speed it's going froze. All they had to do was let the plane fly in the direction it was flying in, even if they stayed at that same altitude, and the tubes would have defrosted. But because the tubes froze, the autopilot turns off because it needs the speed. And the Airbus that they were flying is heavily programmed with all sorts of rules about what's supposed to happen, right? And it turned out because of the AI, because the plane is flown mostly not by the human pilot, the human pilots were no longer skilled enough to do something simple. They stalled the plane into the ocean, right? And the problem you have is if you start using AI as a substitute for, you know, work, particularly, you know, cerebral work.
Medical professions,
you know, and there's plenty of things that go on in industrial environments that require human supervision. The problem becomes that the humans are no longer trained to do this.
So a long way of saying that you don't think Dr. Robots ought to replace real physicians.
I think Dr. Robot should be an adjunct to real physicians, but it turns it very much into everything is therapeutic, whereas the more mysterious elements of healing.
Okay, but when chatbots often wrote to, I mean, it's like 1 in 6 adults use this service. They were sorry to hear about the user's symptoms and how great and important their questions were.
What kind of sycophantic, you know? I mean. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
So this woman was frustrated that her human doctor wasn't matching ChatGPT's bedside manner.
Right.
And she sent her doctor a list of kind messages the robot had sent to her.
Well, but you know, your human doctor has human fatigue. Your human doctor has a schedule that's too long and rushed. And, you know, ChatGPT can work through multiple outlets simultaneously. So they can be very caring, and which is not to say that's not a good thing.
So you don't need to work on your empathy is what you're saying.
No, I think you do. I personally need to work on my empathy. Perhaps.
Hey, a couple more things before we got to move on. I want to get this in. Eugenics. You've studied this a lot. And you see a real strong link to racism in the history.
Well, I think a very specific form of racism, because a lot of times when we talk about racism and white supremacy, we're talking about that which is deriving from certain evangelical beliefs, as well as merging that with a jingoistic, you know, kind of view of American history and the other people who still have like Confederate battle flags in their basement, you know, and hiding out like the Japanese on Okinawa that they found 30 years later. But no, this is a very specific kind of eugenics. Eugenics was a movement of American intellectuals.
Back in the...
It started in the 1880s, culminated probably in the 1930s, which is, of course, interesting because that was at the same time that, you know, Hitler adopted the American eugenics part of...
He used some of our strategies.
Well, the UK and the Americans were the big, you know, sort of promoters of eugenics. And this is where you can't say, let's follow the science, right? Because the science of eugenics was that we can make the human race better by eliminating certain under cultures.
Like Irish.
Well, in particular.
Back then.
In particular, it was very much directed against African Americans.
Sure, yeah.
And the reason I bring it up is that that is what allows people, because let's face it, we have a government now of oligarchs and of people who think they're smarter than everybody else because they wrote some code, you know, the tech bros. And their belief is that this world should be run only for them. And so it's easy for them to say, let's get rid of USAID. So what, these under, you know, these less thans die. Let's get rid of, you know, there's no problem with, not being able to feed people because that's a humane way of getting rid of those people.
Well, to me, probably the most blatant example of how eugenic-based racism is alive and well in the U.S. today is Donald Trump's approach to immigration quotas, basically dramatically decreasing the number of people allowed into the country and prioritizing specifically white South Africans. I mean, that is so blatant.
Yeah.
So blatant.
But, you know, racial quotas are not new to American immigration policy.
Right, but that's specific And that, when basically your entire target can be filled by white South Africans.
Of course, but it's ludicrous. But yeah, no, obviously, I don't think his racism comes from an intellectual position.
Does anything in Donald Trump's world come from an intellectual position?
I mean, there's certain things that I think have become idea fixe in him, you know, which is they're never going to change. But I just think you've got a whole government of people who think that the world would be better off if there were less people to take care of. And eugenics is a intellectual, quote, pseudo-scientific justification right. to make that happen.
Yeah. So, hey, one more thing before we, speaking of Trump, there have been a lot of concerns expressed recently about his cognitive decline. Robert Reich, the former Commerce Secretary under Bill Clinton, wrote a pretty, precise assessment of the examples indicating that, yes, this guy is in significant decline. Would you concur with that?
It's the culmination of a lot of things. He is almost 80 years old. And most people, by 80 years old, are in cognitive decline. They are able to compensate.
My mom was not. She was still annoying right up to the end.
Well, they're able to compensate by other means. So I think it's a normal loss of cognitive sharpness. He has horrible sleep. He's up most of the night.
How do you know?
He's sleep deprived. He's falling asleep during the day.
Okay.
And he's texting at all hours of the night. And he doesn't sleep. And that is going to make your cognition even worse. He's also in end-stage narcissistic breakdown.
All right, I understand the narcissistic part. What do you mean end stage? What's the end stage of narcissism?
He at the end stage of narcissism, although this seems kind of just the opposite of what you expect, your ego is gone, right? And everything is about how can I make myself feel better by people telling me I feel that I'm great.
Isn't that just part and parcel of being narcissist?
No, actually, narcissists early on don't need that because they have it internally, right?
Interesting.
You know what the best test for a narcissist is? See if they're a narcissist. Ask them if they're a narcissist. They'll tell you. I mean, because they don't see it as an issue.
You mean they'll tell you and they'll say yes?
Yeah. I mean, does he have full-blown... I mean, I'm not a dementia expert, but does he have a full-blown dementia? No, I think it's just a whole coalescence of things.
Let me ask you this. Compared to Biden's last term, where is he at on the scale of dementia?
Pretty close. Pretty close in terms of the totality. His vocabulary has become extraordinarily limited. He says the same thing over and over again. A lot of what he says is not coherent. We don't know about the physical manifestations of dementia because in late stages of dementia, incontinence is a very bad prognostic sign in dementia. There's all these claims he's incontinent. Who knows? I don't know.
You seem to know about his sleep.
Well, his sleep is obvious because he is. People say he's up all night. He's calling them. We know he's texting at all hours of the night. Plus, he's flying. They fly him around.
Boy, he hasn't called me yet.
So,
I have my phone set on silent.
This is an argument for why 80-year-old people should not be president.
Right. Well, and you look at Bernie Sanders, that's a guy who still seems to be as sharp as a tack.
Yeah, but he's also not the president.
Right.
The stress of being president and having to be up, flying between time zones and all this, this is just not healthy.
So one last question. If Trump's decline is real and proceeding, who is likely to take over when he is unable to function?
Well, I think ceremonially it'll be J.D. Vance. It just depends on who the real president is.
That's what I meant, the real president.
It's hard to say. I mean, Steve Miller is clearly the real president right now.
Maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I don't think so.
No. Better guess is Steve Miller, because, you're right. He is.
Well, he is at the moment.
He's the puppeteer behind the puppet.
Well, he's the liaison to the oligarchs, as well as his own racial theories.
Which fit well theories. With our previous conversation about eugenics. Yeah. Hey, folks, this is Ed Fallon with Charles Goldman on the Fallon Forum. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with a conversation about the UN Climate Summit, COP30. And the question is whether or not the movement toward addressing climate change is going to proceed better without the U.S. being involved. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Thanks to our sponsors, including Catholic Peace Ministry, promoting peaceful resolution to war and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at catholicpeaceministry.com. Thanks also to Westrum Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrum and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry.
You can kick rocks if you don't like how I talk. I'm gonna keep on talking and walk my walk. Ain't changing my tone, ain't changing my song. I was born this way, been loud too long. You can hate my style, you can roll your eyes, but I ain't slowing down, I was born to rise. So kick them rocks if you don't like how I talk. I'm gonna keep on talking and walk my walk.
Welcome back to the Fallon Farm. That was Walk My Walk. Charles, you'll be delighted. I'm a big fan of country music. You'll be delighted to know.
Just what I need is artificial intelligence.
That song made history last week by topping a Billboard chart for country music tunes. It's by some person, right? Some robot called Breaking Rust. And it made it to number one on the Billboard's Country Digital Song Sales chart. Over 3 million streams on Spotify in less than a month. And you know what? It's entirely done by robots. Charles?
I'm telling you. AI has malevolent aims on humanity.
And how do you know that?
Because making more country music is not... I don't think that's for the general good.
Well, I mean, you hear it, and you hear that. I mean, you don't know that's. I wouldn't know that was fake, and I'm a musician.
Right.
You know.
No, it's true.
I mean, where does this go? Where does it lead?
I think that's kind of what's being played out in a lot of the entertainment industry right now. You know, and I think. Matthew McConaughey, actor. Sold.
Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Yeah. They sold the right to their voice to be used for various digital manipulations.
Right.
I can't remember now.
So they figured they're going to get ahead of it.
Yeah,
you know?
and make money on it.
Right.
Nice guys. Yeah. So I think it's hilarious that in this song, one of the lines is, "I was born this way." We're talking about a robot. You know, come on.
there's no question. This is a development that needs to be dealt with. And the way it's being dealt with now is it's not. I mean, because essentially the tech bros have captured the American government.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Donald Trump's in their thrall and, you know, they keep coming bearing gifts. And
crypto gifts, among others.
Or something. Yeah. Or
just gold. Yeah, just gold. Right? Gold-plated bathroom faucets, you know?
Oh, God, that bathroom. Anyway, so...
You want to use it, don't you? Admit it. You really want to use that
you
bathroom.
You know, I'll never forget when they had the picture of the files in Mar-a-Lago in the bathroom. There was a chandelier in the bathroom.
Right.
You know? But anyway, they don't want to be regulated.
Yeah.
Right? And...
But there are AI... knowledgeable people in Congress, members of Congress, who understand very strongly that it needs to be regulated, and yet they're being stymied.
I'll tell you something. You know, this gets back to the eugenics issue. There is genetic research going on that is absolutely banned in the United States. They're trying to find a place to do it, in which they're going to, because, you know, it's not a question of changing one gene. to change the characteristics of an embryo leading into, you know, a child, you know, for many of the characteristics people want to control, you have to change multiple genes.
Right.
And because of the ability to easily map polygenic genomes now, there are companies getting together that want to do this to embryo engineering. Mm. It's absolutely banned in the United States and most countries in the world. But this is what the tech bros want to do. This is the eugenics. This is eugenics right. on steroids.
Could they genetically modify people's genes in order to have a more affinity for country music?
I'm not sure they're capable of doing that just yet, because that would require really a total genomic shift in some people like myself. But no, nevertheless, this is eugenics at a level that you've never seen it before.
All right. And let's talk about COP30, maybe climate discussions at a level we've never seen it before. I want to share with you from Cristina Figueres. She was a key architect of the 2015 Paris Agreement. And she says that there's a sentiment at the UN climate conference in Brazil that, you know, Trump's boycott is actually a blessing. She said, quote, "I do think they'll be working with the Saudis," they'll mean the U.S., "will be working with the Saudis to obstruct behind the scenes, but they won't be able to do direct bullying." And to Trump, she said, "Ciao, bambino," which is Italian for bye-bye, little boy. "You want to leave? Leave." That is so cheeky.
Well, I mean, the position of the United States under the Trump administration is absolutely clear. You know, it's all about drill, baby, drill, even though it doesn't seem to be happening. Because here again, Trump doesn't seem to have a basic understanding of economics, which is that if you oversupply fossil fuel, the price goes down. Well, it's not worth going to Alaska to drill up there.
And on economics, I mean, as Figueres points out, clean energy technologies are attracting twice as much global investment as fossil fuels. And as you know, the price of solar energy, the price of wind power, keeps dropping. And related to that, regenerative agriculture, which is what Kathy and I do in a small way here in Des Moines, across the global south, that stuff is surging, it's growing. And I love this one more quote by Figueres. Quote, "The decarbonization of the world economy is irreversible. The momentum is building to the point where it is simply unstoppable with or without the United States."
Well, and especially given the focus that the Trump administration has on competition with China, they're ceding this entire field to China.
Yeah, China is actually beginning to see emissions drop, even though, again, they're still the world's biggest polluter. But they are, what, a fourth of the world's population?
Well, not just that. They're also the second largest, probably the first largest economy in the world at this point.
And just ahead of California.
No, they're third. The point is that China's serving basically as a manufacturing nidus for everybody outside of China. So they're aggregating all this, carbon activity or carbon-based activity, and they're also very quickly finding ways to make solar panels cheaper. If they get ahead of us on battery technology, that'll be the next step to them really being the dominant.
And they're going to. I mean, Trump is setting us back so far and so quickly. I mean, with China's help, countries like Ethiopia and Nepal, they basically have leapfrogged over gasoline-burning cars. They're going straight to battery-powered ones, straight to electric ones.
Right.
You know, Nigeria, which is also an oil state.
And a state that's in the crosshairs now.
But they, they've got plans to build a solar manufacturing, plant. And all over the world, things are shifting. And we're not the only exception, but we're the worst. And we've got a president that is denying reality. And so bad, I mean,
And what is it based on? He thinks that windmills are bad for birds, which is true, but so are skyscrapers. And actually, tall buildings in the United States kill more birds than windmills.
Yeah, ban skyscrapers and cats. Ban cats. I don't mean that because I love cats.
Yeah. But and then he's got the thing about it hurts the whales to be building out in the ocean.
I don't think that's true. Yeah.
Well, he does. He believes a lot of things.
I think it's important to recognize that COP30 these annual UN events have been disappointing in the long run. But overall, if you look at the big history of incremental progress, we're seeing some significant developments. And right now, you know, remember at one point, the projection was for a 6 degree centigrade increase, or Celsius increase in global temperature. That dropped to 3 degrees after Paris, and it's dropping even further. Right now, we're looking at a scenario where we might actually be able to hold things at 1.5 degrees increase. So do not despair, Charles. You look despaired.
I'm not sure that's going to happen, but I do think that, yes. And this is the culmination of what, you know, all these free marketeers said. Let the market determine what gets made in the energy realm, what gets produced, you know, what gets mined. And if you can prove that these technologies can be done equivalently or cheaper than, you know, using fossil fuels, and they're called fossil fuels for a reason, because they are an archaic technology.
Well, and they're,
then the other thing is, let's face it, and Biden did the same thing. They kept the Chinese electric cars. What is it? BYD? Is that the company that makes them? I can't remember.
Not sure.
And they're like better than Tesla's at a third of the cost.
And I bet their CEO is not being paid $1 trillion.
$1 trillion, yeah.
Hey, Charles, I got to run to a short break. Again, Ed Fallon and Charles Goldman with you here. When we come back, we're going to talk water quality and some of the obstacles being put in the way of addressing that issue at the local level. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, Ed Fallon and Charles Goldman with you here, folks. So water quality, I think this is going to become one of the top issues in the 2026 election, certainly here in Iowa, maybe more in Iowa than even anywhere else. But right now with what's happening relevant to water, I think it's going to be a huge political issue. It already is a huge health and environmental issue.
Well, I think it overlaps with another issue, which came up with the cancer survey in Iowa earlier this year,
right?
Showing that Iowa is pretty much the only state in the union where cancer rates are going the wrong way.
Yeah, the only state where they're increasing.
Right, and some may be attributable to the fact that Iowans have a pretty heavy drinking history, even compared
to... Not just water.
Not just water, but alcohol, that's correct. That can't account for all of it, and some of the cancers that are becoming more prevalent are not ones usually associated with drinking alcohol.
Well, and one of our problems, and this is one that's hard to... It's not our fault. We have a high level of radon in our soil, and radon...
Well, there are other states that have high levels of radon also. I lived in West Virginia, in near western Pennsylvania. That was also an area where coal mines were sitting there. And, you know, those are the kind of mines that the radon accumulates in.
But it's stuff in the water, the nitrates, other chemicals.
Well, that's what's interesting. And so I thought it was interesting to see, especially given, and for people who live outside Iowa, what happened this summer was that the Central Iowa Water, whether they've sent around Waterworks.
I just still call them Waterworks.
They're Waterworks, right. So basically all of the Des Moines plus the suburbs around have coalesced into one water management entity, whereas opposed previously it was all sort of...
It's like 750,000, 800,000 people, I think.
Yeah, and this is an area that in some areas is dependent on wells, but in other areas, and the majority of people are dependent on surface water, which is brought into this area by two rivers. And so during the summer, the nitrate level was so high in the water coming down from the northern part of the state, as it, you know, traversed Des Moines, that the waterworks called for people to stop watering their lawns, which is not the worst thing in the world. I mean,
And not because watering your lawn with nitrate in the water is a problem. It might actually be good for your lawn, but because they couldn't remove it.
Well, just
it.
Like the CO2 in the air is good for the
right. But they couldn't remove the nitrates. We have the most expensive nitrate removal system in the world. And it couldn't keep up with the level needed
That's correct.
To render
so,
the water
So they didn't want safe. They didn't want the water that had been treated for nitrate removal to be used for watering your lawn, since you can't separate it out.
Yeah.
They wanted to keep it for drinking and making water balloons.
But you know, watering lawns isn't, and this is an issue that's relevant nationwide. Watering lawns isn't the only problem we've got with water. Look at the data centers and how much they are eating up, and how many. I mean, Kathy and I drove through a suburb of Des Moines the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Data centers everywhere. Every one of them a water hog and an electricity hog.
Well, that's correct, because these data centers are running their servers all the time. They generate a huge amount of heat, and obviously, if these servers are heated, they self-destruct. So you have to cool them down, and air cooling is much less efficient than using water cooling, because water conducts heat much more efficiently than does air.
Here's something that I maybe know the answer to that I don't, and I shouldn't know the answer. What happens once they're done using the water for cooling? Does that get, you know, just rejected back out into the stream? Does it evaporate to the point where it has no more functional value?
I think it's just put back into the surface. You know, the surface water,
and is it
which
altered?
Is very similar to what they do with nuclear plants.
Right? Is it altered to some?
No,
some,
I mean, it doesn't pick up radioactivity or anything. But it's
not radioactivity,
hot.
But
it's heated hot. Water, which
right.
of course is not good
for the fish,
for the aquatic life, and other things. The newer data centers are trying to become essentially carbon zero as much as possible. I'm not sure about the ones that have been built already here in this area. They're trying to recycle the water so they're not using new water and just simply, discharging it. And they're also, certainly you could run a data center with a solar array during the day. The problem is there has to be you have to have some kind of battery storage of a
large
really, scale.
You really shouldn't be on your cell phone at night anyhow. You should be sleeping.
No, but these... You don't turn the computers off.
Oh.
So, but getting back to the nitrate issue, it's very interesting because the nitrate issue is both personally a problem, not going to say personally, but a problem for the locally for Iowa residents, because nitrate is a carcinogen. It gets converted in the body to nitrosamines, and those are carcinogenic. Hmm. And it's been clearly shown that drinking water, nitrates, are associated, elevated levels are associated with elevated rates of colon cancer specifically. Other studies say also thyroid cancer, bladder cancer, and in the big meta-analysis, the rate of brain tumors and in particular gliomas, which of course are the worst of the brain tumors. Mm-hmm. And the level of nitrates in the water that the EPA sets as the upper limit is 10 parts per million.
Right. We've talked about that.
And many people,
show.
Right, many people say it should be 5.
Or I've even heard 3.
And actually over 5, you're starting to see increased risk of cancer.
Right.
At times this summer, the levels here were in the 40s.
Yeah. So who lobbied to get the EPA to put it so high?
No, 10's not that high. That's been the way it's been, even coming into the Trump administration.
I was assuming it goes back before the Trump administration, but it's still higher than what a lot of intelligence science recommends.
Yeah, but I guess it was a compromise between, these systems are expensive, you know, and it was a compromise to keep it at a level where it isn't highly associated. Yes, the hazard ratio is probably going to be like 1.3 or something like that, which is not, I'm not making light of it, because if you're one of the people who has a colon cancer induced by higher levels of nitrates, it's harm to you.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's really when it gets to these double digit levels that we're seeing. And of course the issue is, where are these nitrates coming from? Well, we all know where they're coming from.
Agriculture.
It's runoff from agriculture. Yeah. So what happened was, there's a monitoring program in Iowa, which has three facets to it. One is to monitor how much is being, you know, ejected into the large, how much nitrates are being ejected into the large rivers and flowing out into the Missouri and the Mississippi rivers. Where does it end up?
The Gulf.
And it leads to
Mexico.
Yeah, the Gulf of Mexico. That's correct. And it leads to this huge, like state-sized hypoxic zone in the Gulf, off of the delta there, which is killing all the aquatic life and killing the fisheries.
So beyond nitrates, I mean, water is an issue again nationwide. I mean, take New Mexico, Arizona, southwestern states. I mean, they're struggling with adequate
water. Their issue
resources
is different.
There.
Their issue is the quantity.
Sure,
of water.
But as development continues to expand, and as these data centers and other industrial developments continue to demand lots of water usage, there's going to be more and more battles for that limited resource. I mean, I saw that 10 years ago when I walked through New Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question.
A farmer who was complaining about how Santa Fe was taking more and more of the water that he used to have access to grow his crops. You know, I mean, these kind of battles are going to be more and more pronounced. And I see it. I mean, it's going to be regional, area by area. But there are some parts of the country, and certainly here in Iowa, where I think water is going to be a key issue in the election next year. Do you agree?
I think here, yes. I'm not sure about, I don't think the whole country, particularly, you know, east of the Mississippi, is as engaged with that. Yeah, out west, it's always been an issue, you know, and the federal government's the arbiter of how the most important flow out there, which is the Colorado River, is apportioned between the states and Mexico. It's the same thing up in Canada. I mean, they're using astronomical amounts of water to, you know, create the tar sands oil, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're having to heat all this water to blast the tar sands out of there. And, you know, it's ludicrous, because you're absolutely right. As the population continues to grow, water is going to become an issue, which will actually probably lead to warfare.
And it's a huge issue in fracking states. Yeah, Pennsylvania. We saw in Pennsylvania there, I mean, people who are unable to drink the water from their well because it was poisoned through fracking, and they had to truck the water in.
The water table has gotten so low that the fracking chemicals, which tend to accumulate lower in the water table, are now, that's where they're having to drill their wells to drink the water.
That, and also you got aquifers like the Ogallala Aquifer in Nebraska that are no longer at their, you know, at a level that we expect them to be sustainable.
Well,
so,
I mean,
I don't see why this doesn't become a huge issue.
Well, the other side of this, of course, is that the rainfall patterns in different places have become somewhat, so in some places, ameliorate the problems of the amount of water. In other places, they would make it worse because it comes so much at once.
Yeah.
All it does is run off.
Or flood your town. And then
exactly. So, but I mean, the thing here is this is what's most notable about Iowa is most of the money that is now going to go from this monitoring system, which was not just looking at what was happening now, but was looking at what happens if we intervene with various modalities. They monitor that, and they were also monitoring new technologies that they wanted to bring to the farmers, you know, here. And understand that Iowa is responsible for a third of all the nitrates that end up in the hypoxic zone of the Gulf of Mexico.
That is shameful.
It is.
That is
and
shameful.
And it's way more than any of the neighboring agricultural
right.
states.
Yeah.
So, of course, the EPA is uninterested under Trump in monitoring this because, you know, it's just like COVID was. Don't test, then the problem goes away.
Yeah, if you don't ask, you don't
If you
know.
Don't ask, then yeah. there's no problem.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Charles, thanks for joining me today, folks. Charles Goldman here with me, Ed Fallon. I'm going to get rid of this guy, and I'm bringing on somebody much cuter, my wife, Kathy Burns. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about French frozen foods back in a minute on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. All right, Ed Fallon with you folks, and Kathy Burns joining me in the studio to discuss frozen foods from France. And that's more alliteration than you can usually manage in a segment title.
We have a lot of frozen foods in our refrigerator and the two deep freezes downstairs. But mm-hmm. the frozen foods we're talking about were featured in a New York Times article. A leading nutrition scientist in Paris, in particular, she relies on frozen food, a grocery chain named Picard. And that kind of caught people's attention because she's a nutritionist.
And, you know, you think about French food and having, well, we did our honeymoon in France years ago. And it's all fresh. It's local. It's fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really think about frozen foods as being part of the French diet.
I do remember when we were in Paris in particular and a couple of the other towns that I was surprised at the frozen food stores. And it was the Picard chain, and that is the most popular chain in France right now. And the nutritionist views these foods as part of a solution to the fact that in most homes, both parents are now away at work, they have little time for food preparation, and if they want to keep eating healthy, they've got to cut some corners somewhere. But freezing does maintain a good amount of the nutrients in the foods.
Yeah. And again, isn't part of the challenge the demands that modern living are placing on people, not just in our country but around the world, to eat quickly, to have very little time mm-hmm. to prepare food at home?
Right.
And so my thought has always been, well, that ought to change. That the structure of our workday and our society, how we live, ought to change.
Exactly.
Instead of trying to change how we eat, because changing how we eat has not been very good for our bodies.
I think we work ourselves to death.
And we eat ourselves into obesity and heart yeah. problems and, you know, other ailments that could be avoided by eating fresh food. So can you ever expect frozen foods? I mean, we freeze foods,
mm-hmm.
but they're all like, we freeze a bag of carrots,
and
a bag of green beans.
But that's the kind of frozen food that the Picard chain and other frozen food places, and there aren't many besides that one, that they do have. They don't have ultra-processed, you know, I would call it manufactured food. So
yeah, because most of your processed foods, most of your frozen foods in the U.S. are ultra-processed as well.
A lot of them are. You're not going to find chicken pot pie that is full of all kinds of chemicals and stuff. You know, you're going to find the frozen chicken. You're going to find maybe some frozen crust.
Or you mean in France?
Pre-made. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
the French and Parisians in particular have a reputation for avoiding the obesity epidemic that we have here in the U.S. So some people have called that the French paradox. It's based on the belief that the paradox comes from the fact that people think that Parisians just exist and French people exist on croissants and eclairs, right? But they still remain relatively slender. But that's not really how they eat. So there is a rising obesity rate in France. And
but nowhere near as bad as ours.
No. Right. In 2020, the rate was in France was at 17% of adults, and in the U.S. that percent was 40%. In Paris, the rate of obesity in adults is only 14%.
And that might be because Parisians tend to walk a lot?
They do. And there are government regulations. I know some people think that's a bad phrase. Government regulations that help to ensure healthier practices. They have established taxes on sodas. They've started ad campaigns about the benefits of fruits and vegetables, including frozen and canned options that are organic and healthy.
And again, frozen and canned fruits and vegetables that are not highly processed.
That's correct.
Right.
That's
not correct. Not ultra processed. Okay.
Another very French thing is that they have maintained the tradition of having lots of local shops and grocery stores. In Paris, they've got this 15-minute city ideal. In other words, all of life's essentials should be within a short walk or bike ride of wherever you live.
You know, 10 years ago, when I walked through Paris on the final 2 days of the march from Normandy Beach to Paris for the UN Climate Summit, it was amazing how many farmers markets I passed. Little farmers markets just in neighborhoods all over the city, in the suburbs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, yeah, they're everywhere.
So the French tradition lives on, and it's been a little bit altered with the frozen foods and a few convenience type foods. But I do see it all in all as a way to help people maintain a lifestyle even in the face of the what we would call the American influence of these huge work hours and excessive stresses on families.
And we process foods in all kinds of ways. You could just eat a raw food diet.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that wouldn't be very satisfying. But, you know, boiling, baking, roasting, freezing, canning, that's all processing food.
It is,
And the question is how it's processed and what gets added to it as you're processing it. And, I mean, the problem in the U.S. is we have subsidized all the wrong things, and some of that includes some corn. I mean, corn has plenty of good uses, but, you know, high fructose corn syrup and some of the other additives in ultra-processed foods is not one of them.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, Kathy, thanks for doing some research there. Thanks for joining us. Folks, thanks for being a part of this conversation. Much gratitude to our production squad of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Detterman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our short list, of local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Westrum Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry, also Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks to our nonprofit partners as well, and thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of Cutting Edge Talk Radio.
J'étais chien méchant, elle me fait manger dans sa menette. J'avais des dents de loup, je les ai changées pour des quenottes. Je me suis fait